Real people. Real opinions. Real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
Joined in studio by Fran King and also Elder Kenny,
who
make up Fear of Folk.
That's us.
Now, it's good to see you. I can't see you behind the screen there. You're like me, you know, you're of a tiny minority.
Yeah.
Lovely to see you guys. A little bit of historic here. Can I point out to people, by the way, we're all a base, so we're safe enough. Not that, I think we're getting past that point. So it's been a difficult 19 months, not just for us here in radio, because this is literally the first guest we've had in the studio in over 19 months, but also for you guys as entertainers, as songwriters. Yeah. Fran, what's it been like? It must be like, you know, Michael Schumacher having his car taken off him.
It is. It started off as the scariest thing in the world because we were, on paper, it was to be a really busy year between the various acts that we play, both Eleanor and I play, and, you know, and guest in other
You just
things.
Remind people, of course, you're with the classic Beatles, you're with the Bootleg Beach Boys, and you had the Paul McCartney, which was
tribute, called, yeah, mm-hmm. All the Best. That's still up and going. We're hoping to get that on its feet pretty soon. But we were kind of, all of a sudden, everything was sidelined, and you were kind of that's your whole diary for the rest of the year. So you know, you still have your outgoing, your bills are not saying to you, oh, you can't pay us this month.
Yeah, bills don't get COVID.
Yeah. So anyway, it was scary in the sense of we had to, like everybody, get used to the first lockdown, the initial one. And then it was a case of a lot of people in the arts were saying, well, I'll write that novel I never got to write. And I was kind of, I suppose I was scared, to be honest with you, to see what it would bring.
Well, I mean, initially we thought it was going to be like a 2 weeks flat in the curve.
Yeah. Eleanor, I had a funny feeling it was going to be longer, though.
I don't know whether you remember Eleanor, Catherine Martin, the Minister for Entertainment.
Yeah.
She turned around at one stage and made some really flippant remark about you guys should retrain yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. We've heard that a lot.
Was that upsetting
to
you?
It was a little bit. You know, I mean, I have a few things going on. I have the McCartney, the Linda McCartney job there. I'm a wedding singer, too, and... You know, there's so many people in the wedding industry, the bands, the singers, the ceremony singers, really let down by that. People in original music, friends who are actors, you know, we were really devastated by that. All the theatre work and everything else, it was really tough going. But again, like Fran, I was excited in lockdown. There was something kind of, ooh, you know, I did all
I think
the,
there was a novelty factor to lockdown
initially. The
initial
one.
The Joe Wicks workouts, all that stuff. Lost that 10 pounds and put it on again in lockdown too. So it was kind of rough.
And it was a case of, okay, I'll live on 350 quid a week as long as it's only going to be for a few weeks.
And that's the thing. The unknown was the scariest part of it. And luckily for us, we had, as Fear of Folk, we had put a few things in the can just before lockdown. In other words, we'd recorded an EP that wasn't mixed yet, but at least it could be mixed at home. It was mixed in Dublin at the guy who produced it at his studio. So we had stuff in the can ready to release. But of course, now the next challenge is we couldn't do this kind of thing.
So you couldn't
promote it.
Or you couldn't get up on a stage and sing it again.
Or open for somebody, or the usual kind of methods that were open to you were now shut.
Yeah.
So, but what ended up happening is, to kind of summarise the last 18 months is, we just started writing like crazy, and we have a huge backlog of songs.
We did, but we didn't do a lot of the Facebook. We didn't do many Facebook lives or anything. There was a lot of that going on as well, and a lot of our, you know, friends and colleagues and stuff. They there was a huge amount of that.
Was that a benefit to people? I mean, I did see a lot of DJs doing it and bands doing it.
I think it was for sanity. I don't know whether it was kind of you were playing to a captive audience, or whether, I think initially maybe a lot of people started to tune in, but then you started getting everybody who was in the arts, which, you know, which is the right thing to do, get out there and ply your wares. But unfortunately, I think, you know, people started finding other things to do, Netflix.
Now, Facebook clamped down on it as well, by the way.
You know? Yeah.
I mean, there was a time, and I know a few guys that I knew who were DJs.
Oh, about the live thing,
Okay, so they were doing their mixing live, and it was grand for a few months, and then Facebook suddenly clamped down on copyright. Yeah. And stop them all from doing it, which was a bit of a pity, to be honest with you.
There was a surge in lockdown one again, but and I think some of the more dedicated kept at it because it was the rent. They needed it for the rent. Like I'm lucky to own a place, but they were really struggling. They had to do it, and it kept them going. It kept them, and they had some support there, and it was good. But everyone got a bit tired about it, especially with that. That minister announced that kind of remark. It was just was bad taste.
And I suppose there was a bit of hope then last Christmas when, you know, there was a reopening just before Christmas. She said, okay, everybody was thinking, even here at the radio station, because our advertising revenue obviously plummeted by probably 80%, we kind of thought, okay, well, at least we might get a good January or February out of this.
Exactly, yeah.
And then the same thing happened again. We're back to square one again.
Well, this is it. It was the unforeseen. And as you know, in the music business and DJ business, everything is booked months in advance. So what we've had is wedding couples moving with us two and three times. There's one couple that have moved their wedding till 2024. And we've been with them since 2020. Like, that's a long time.
Will they even be together?
Yeah. Well, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Will they fall out of love before that happens?
That's romantic.
That's the really sad stuff that doesn't get maybe as much attention as it did, is the heartache it caused an awful lot of couples who were planning their big day, which is now their little day. Because then I think at one stage it was five people.
Yeah,
at a wedding, was it? I think it was down to about five.
Was it? I can't. It was a ridiculous. Yeah, it was. It was six. I think it was six people
six
at a wedding.
People, yeah,
and I think that was inclusive of musicians and stuff.
Well,
so
well, that was including the bride, the groom, the priest,
and
the two mothers and fathers.
It was just crazy, though. It was a crazy time.
And of course, it must have been upsetting then when you're hearing Tony Holohan saying every now and again, you know, you can have a few people, but there's no singing and dancing.
It's a little up in the air still. We all have to kind of, we're all kind of gripping to the table, hoping things are happening and things are still getting moved and put forward.
Of course, nothing is quite, it's all go green lights, but nothing is
really. So the green light was last Monday, essentially, but now it's a limited capacity
as well. Like traffic, it takes a while for everyone to get into gear and get moving again. You know, that's just the nature of the business.
So they've extended the PUP payments till 2022, which is probably going to be February 2022, I would imagine.
I'd say at the earliest,
And I think that's fair because, like yourselves, you know, venues are going to have limited capacity. So some people are not going to be rehired yet, you know, staff, etc., if there's going to be limited capacity. So everybody in the industries and all those industries directly affected won't get rehired maybe till January or February. Yeah. Because, of course, you're right. You can't just suddenly start gigging on Monday. No. You have to have a 5 or 6 week build up to it or lead up to it. It's marketable.
And venues as well have to sell the tickets. They have to make money at this limited capacity. So they have to, to be a lead in. Well, I don't know at the current. I think after October, when they go to full capacity again, I think it's good to go. But I don't
What's your own personal feeling on it? When you see other countries around Europe,
like the UK,
the demographic that you're playing for, they need to have the confidence to go out. That's the issue we're discussing. Like, we know that, you know, things are opening up again.
Yeah.
But, you know, the age group of people, they need to feel safe. And that's the big question, do they?
Isn't this the whole thing? We've spent God knows how much money, you know, telling people how dangerous COVID-19 was.
Yeah.
And thankfully, we're at a point now, you know, where so many people are vaccinated, et cetera, and all the different reasons why it's not as dangerous as it was. And most likely by the end of the year, it'll be an epidemic rather than a pandemic.
Yeah.
So should we be spending equal amounts of money now telling people, come on, let's get back out there. Let's go to restaurants. Yeah. Let's go to a gig. You know, and telling people it's safe. The public announcements that we run here all day on Classic Hits for the HSE and for the government. Should we have more public announcements now paid for by the state?
I think so.
Telling people it's safe.
I think, as Eleanor was touching on there, I think it's for a certain demographic. I mean, 20-year-olds upwards are bulletproof. They're going to go to a festival, a gig, like a light. And rightly so, they should. But older demographic people are going to be a bit tentative to go out to shows and theatres because it's close proximity again. And we've been hearing so much of stay apart, stay distant. So I guess after October, the challenge is re-educating people that it's going to be okay to get back out there.
Well, I was talking to Luann there during the week, Luann Parlin, and she was telling me that even with the theatre gigs at the moment, it's too restrictive. She said, you're not allowed to go to the toilet during the performance.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. You're not, there's
can't
no,
dance. They
no
can't
bars
dance.
Open.
You can't. Where they're giving out
yeah, there's a risk for singing and all that kind of carry on. Oh, okay. She said, and also, it's just limited capacity. And she said, it really isn't worth it at the moment.
I don't know how limited capacity can make the overheads for the venue to make money, whatever about the artists, but. You know,
well, the venue makes money probably off the final 20% of people that are in the place.
Well, you know yourself, venues make money by bums on seats.
Yeah.
And the more bums on seats, the bigger profit margin. And they have to pay their costs and the bands and whatever, other advertising costs and stuff like that. So I don't know how it works at such a small capacity because the overheads are still the same, really.
Yeah.
You know, for hiring in the act, especially if it's an American touring act or UK or whatever.
Do you imagine the big artists? Like, I don't know, Eleanor, you know the big kind of artists, the big touring artists, the U2s of this world. Do you imagine they were badly hit? Now, I know they've plenty of money, etc.
Yeah, I think they were.
Do you think they were badly
hit? I
think
so, yeah, because music doesn't sell anymore. You can't, like, vinyl, it's getting kind of fashionable and it's kind of cool and it's great to see, but really, you know.
Obviously, not on the scale it would have been 20 years ago.
Downloaded on Apple, downloaded on Spotify. They have to tour. And those big bands have to tour. They're employing about, God, how many hundreds of people?
Yeah.
Yeah, they need to sell tickets.
I mean, how do artists, when you, I mean, that's something we probably don't talk about enough.
Yeah.
You know, comparison to the days of the Beatles and Queen and Pink Floyd and all these the great sales. Artists that we're going to be talking about. Record sales was the big thing. Yeah. I mean, they sold millions of records. So they made quite a substantial amount of money in royalties and record sales. And the record companies made a lot of money too, and the distributors, etc. Yeah, yeah. Nowadays, that's gone. Because people don't even buy CDs anymore.
Well, you need 2 billion streams to make like 20 quid. You know?
The old guys are back on tour again, aren't they?
It's ridiculous. That's why you're saying, I mean, we were only listening to, on the way in, we heard Joe Jackson on the radio. Classic. Okay. He was supposed to play the Olympia, I think, last year.
Yeah, Trent, great,
he's coming next
artist,
year
yeah.
instead.
Didn't know he was still going, by the way.
But he's going because he needs he has to earn a revenue. Like, record sales.
And he would have been a million seller at the time. Yeah, I'm coming out. What was the song?
Different for Girls. And
Different for Girls,
all that
yeah.
Stuff.
What a great song, yeah.
We're listening. I was actually only on the radio on the way, and I was thinking. I was actually trying to guess. Was that 1982? Turns out it was 82.
I'm trying to think of a song that's coming.
He had like 3 years of big hits.
Is she really going out with him?
Is she really going? Out? Another one, yeah. Like, it was three in a row, kind of three golden years for him. Yeah. But like, you couldn't.
And
live
is he not? But is he not still getting royalties from that music around the world?
Well. It depends if it's on the radio. You'll get a, you know, and you know, that's considered.
Well, I suppose that's the classic
nostalgic
radio station
thing. Yeah. So, to make actual revenue, bands have to play and tour. And I mean, there's a reason why all these '60s bands are coming back together again to go
Elton
out on the road.
John used to have flowers, fresh flowers, delivered to every mansion he owns. I don't think he's doing that anymore. I reckon. I mean, they all have to tour. All those guys, the albums that you know.
And they have to keep the lifestyle they're accustomed to,
like,
of course, as well. So when you release a song, like your more recent one, I mean, will you make money out of that on Spotify?
No. Unless we get
the Imro statements are hilarious.
They have things. Oh, they are. They're like we
so
actually.
So you get a check from Imro every now and again, a check for 50 pence or something like that.
But it's like, well, you don't do it for that. Well, you do ultimately, but you do.
Well, we played
it
once, so you might get something out of that. I think I played it twice that night.
In the old days, with a single campaign, and you were going from radio station to radio station, and you were opening for an act, you would you at least maybe break even, or you'd make some money back that it cost you to record. But nowadays, we're in a different kettle of fish.
It's backwards. Now, the music promotes your tour. It's the other way around.
It's like the calling card now. It's the other way around, you know.
And I mean, when it comes to Irish radio, you know, and we're all guilty of it here in radio stations, they pick the popular songs that people want to
your
hear.
Your hands are really tight.
It's like, I suppose, when Jeff Lynne plays in the Three Arena.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to hear the new shit.
No.
Everyone just wants to hear the yellow songs.
Or the support act, in fairness.
I mean, nobody wants to. Well, your good friend, of course, was support the last time he was over, Scott. With the shoes, wasn't it?
Yeah. He opened for them,
That's right. But I mean, nobody wants to hear that stuff. So people just want to hear the popular songs. Excuse me, sorry, I've got a frog in my throat. So is it difficult for bands like you to get the airplay, particularly in RTE, for example?
Yeah, it is. But, you know, I suppose the rule of thumb should be the quality of the work should speak for itself, you know, in theory. But like that, again, it helps to know a few people. It helps to have been on the circuit for a little while and had a relationship with DJs in various stations to be able to go and promote your record in the usual channels. But throw into the mix COVID on top of that and on top of the advent of streaming. I think the guy we read about him the other day, the guy who owns Spotify's, worth about 20 billion and he's never made a record in his life.
No.
You know.
And knows nothing about music.
And it's the likes of why Pete Townes and all these people are wearing their head going, what the hell? Like, we need to renegotiate. But
initially, didn't a lot of artists refuse to go on Spotify?
Yeah, there was a thing where Taylor Swift went off it for a couple of years back in 2014.
There was a kind of resistance to it initially, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, your hands
But
are
I
right.
remember the same resistance to MP3s when
the Beatles
came out
did the same. The Beatles wouldn't have their catalogue on Apple, ironically, being their label back in the day. But there was an unsettled, unresolved issue with Apple for years. The two Apples, as in the Beatles Apple and Apple Music. And the Beatles would refuse to put their whole catalogue in there. So the only way you could get it was CD or vinyl back
what was
in,
the
or
first,
tapes.
A historical question for you. What was the first album or the first artist to be available on download?
On download?
Yeah, his releases album on download before anywhere else.
I haven't a clue.
Was it Michael Jackson?
No, it was David Bowie, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, at the time it would have been just MP3s. So that either it was available on his website. He had a website, and
he was always very at the kind of crest of all that stuff, wasn't he? Like selling virtual albums.
Napster
like
was the big thing. Do you remember
that's
Napster?
It, yeah. Oh, wasn't that illegal?
It was illegal, but the guy that developed Napster then went in with Mark Zuckerberg with Facebook. I mean, he was. I think he got into trouble over it. He came some criminal charges over it. But in the end, he was never.
And then it got legalized. There was a legalized version.
Well, he sold it. I think he sold it, and I think that's. But that was the start of Spotify, probably.
And that was the start of streaming as well, whether it was illegal or it was where you had to go for torrents and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And now, like, it's all.
But the famous story when Steve Jobs went to Richard Branson. When he had the Virgin Megastores, and asked him would he be interested in getting involved in a new business called iTunes, which would be where people can download music, and Richard Branson says, "Don't be so stupid, no one's ever going to want to do that." Yeah. And she regrets that decision.
I'd say so.
I think the young kids now, though, I mean, we were in Tower Records last week, and vinyl's just taken massive. It's blown
I was
up
in
again.
Gold, I was in Golden Discs the other day. There's more vinyl than there is CD and DVDs.
It's fabulous. Yeah. Like the artwork.
There's two full racks of it.
It's the strangest time in music. Because
well, I suppose they don't have a choice because CDs, nobody's buying them really anymore because of Spotify and what have you. Yeah. And then the DVDs, nobody's buying them. Everybody watches movies on download now. Yeah. So I think that market has gone from. The gaming market has moved online as well.
Yeah,
nobody's really buying physical games anymore. So the new PlayStation,
son, he downloads them all.
Some of them don't even have a CD-ROM drive in them. So you just download the bloody things. So I think the physicality's gone out of that business. So I think vinyl is their only option, isn't it?
And you would think. I remember when this stuff was getting mooted in the late 90s when bands were kind of being told about the digital age coming in and, you know, CDs being surpassed, and we were thinking, oh no, it's only the heyday of CD now. Yeah. But people were always looking ahead, saying CDs are going to go.
They didn't last long,
and they didn't last long. But the thing we were thinking is, well, if it goes to downloads, it's going to level the playing field for the artist who's at home in his bedroom. He can just stream the stuff. Didn't quite work out like that because there's still the big boys at the top that control the PR.
What I've noticed from my day as a DJ when I used to play music, you know, in the nightclubs, there was always your top songs, your floor fillers, right?
Yeah.
But that's kind of gone now because I think because there's so much music out there and there's so much available on Spotify, music has just become diluted. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, so absolutely.
The good songs are not getting to shine the way they used to because they're just, there's so much out there.
And it's funny you should say that. I did a gig years ago with George Martin, two gigs when he retired, and then he came over for a special Joyce Award in UCD, and he gave a lecture, you know, about the state of music industry today. And some of the kids asked him about the advent of Apple Music and all that. What does he think of that, you know, modern music? Because he'd retired at this stage and he was kind of thinking long and hard, and he said, I'm against it. He said, you know what? He said, it cheapens music to have it on your phone, on your watch. It used to be a thing, a beautiful thing, when you went and bought a vinyl record.
I used to love doing
it. Looked at the sleeve notes
and you were excited getting home with it in your bag.
And there you were. It was like almost like a religious experience to go and listen to your favourite. Bad.
Can you remember
now
doing
it's on a ringtone. It's everywhere. Yeah. It's on television.
But the goal as artists like Fear of Folk, our dream, we belong the tooth for it to be rich and famous and pop stars, but it would be just the ultimate dream to be, you know, featured on a Netflix show and, you know, the credits out or some sort of, you know,
placement of
Amazon
sort of
movie or something. That would be just unbelievable. That gets you out there, doesn't it? Yeah.
Because it gets you known around the world. Because look, there was always that thing, and I don't know whether it's still a thing, that if you break America or if you get a hit in America, you're made. And I don't know, is that still a thing?
I don't think so. I think where the money is now is placements, either in advertisement or in television.
Right,
Netflix or Amazon or one of those shows. If you're featured in that, like we've done it ourselves at home, where you hear an interesting song and you immediately Shazam it on the show, going, that's amazing. Who's that artist? And you wouldn't have heard of them only for that TV show.
And the artist goes on tour then. On the back of that, they get a great tour out of it as well. And they're really underground.
And then
artists,
they get a deal out, or else they've had a deal, but it shines a light on it. Now they're able to stream and maybe get something somewhere down the line, you know.
All right, well, look, we're going to get you to play a few songs while you're here tonight. Yes. Tunes.
We're excited.
And you have your guitars with you.
I have it here,
So what are you going to do first? Well, I know you're going to do a song as well that we're very lucky. We've been an exclusive tonight. You haven't even recorded yet. Is this going to be a guessing game? Would it be a huge insult, by the way?
Yeah.
This is just a personal request, Anna, and I do apologise.
No.
This is insulting.
I know what you're going to ask.
Yeah, before you go tonight.
Yeah.
If you would sing maybe a Beatles song.
Yeah, I knew it. He has to. He has to do the accents on you.
Yeah. So I might get to do Yesterday or something before you go later on.
Sure, yeah.
Okay, so this is Fear. And by the way, the artist is Fear of Folk, and it's Eleanor and Fran. Yeah. And by the way, you have a Facebook page that people can go to. We'll plug all that.
Page.
We'll put a link up actually in our Twitter account. Ashling will do that, won't you?
We're on Instagram. All the
she's on the ball already. Look at her. She's doing it as we talk.
Thanks,
she's actually ahead of us. I'll put a link up on our Facebook page and on our Twitter account if you want to go there and have a look. So what are we going to do first?
We're going to do something new. We're talking about the year we've had of writing and demoing. we have an EP called Notes on Love that we've been releasing one song at a time because in the pandemic, it wouldn't pay to put the record out, and then it has to represent you for the next 3 years. So we've been kind of slowly drip feeding song by song. Because okay. that's the only
the
way to kind of make it
for the concentration
past.
Span of
yeah, and for,
of
yeah for the modern concentration span.
Yeah.
But we've been writing away in a different flavour. We've been kind of listening to a lot of and looking back as well, listening to a lot of Fleetwood Mac and stuff lately. And
well, I can't blame you for that. In fairness, stuff. Yeah.
So it's had an influence. This one is definitely flavoured kind of with kind of an early Fleetwood Mac.
Okay.
Or should I say? Well, not to say early. I mean, with Lindsay Buckingham period, and
all right, okay,
you know, so
okay,
this is called "We Say What's on Our Mind." I'm just trying to remember how we play it now.
Yeah, have you forgotten the song?
You call when it's late at night, too late to put up a fight, and I cannot commit. Just end up swallowing my pride. Just say what's on your mind. No time for a rewind. Life's hard enough, we know, for the punches that we throw. Looking for just a little peace. Yes, we live and learn. There's a point of no return. We may crash or we may burn. So say what's on your mind. No time to be unkind. Life's hard enough, we know, for the punches that we throw. To be unkind. Life's hard enough, we know, for the punches that we throw. We say what's on our mind. No time for a rewind. Life's hard enough, we know, for the punches that we throw.
It's just my second one of those late night bars, you know.
Yeah, a cough.
Yeah. I remember being in one of those bars many, many years ago. There was some guy in the corner, like Murph and the Murph Tones,
oh, yeah.
playing the keyboard and a girl singing. And there was, I think there was only one person in the bar at the back, and all he could do was. And then at the end of the song, he'd go, "We'll be right back."
A little golf club.
Okay, so that's called again.
That's called "We Say What's on Our Mind," and that probably won't be. We haven't even recorded that one yet.
Okay, so it's not even available. So you can't go and find it anywhere.
This is the bootleg version right now.
Yeah, this is it.
You know what I love? I love the harmony. I've always loved your harmonies, Fran. But of course, you hooked up with Eleanor, and I think you sound perfect together. Your voice is just warm to each other.
Yeah, Eleanor. Like the first time I heard her voice, that was. It. I was just like, oh my
You're
god.
You're in love.
And as a person who harmonized for years in bands, it's so easy to harmonize with her because she's got such a warm voice. You can kind of blend in really easy. It's not easy to blend vocals. And I know from being in Beach Boys bands and Beatles bands, if you don't have the right mix, it does stick out like a sore thumb.
Does it help that, I mean, I don't want to be personal, okay, but does it help that you're in a relationship together? Does that make it more difficult or does it make it easier?
Interesting question. What do you think?
You know what? It depends on the gig. Sometimes, I think when it comes to writing.
Like, do you ever have a Barney just before a gig?
Oh, God, all the time. Especially the church gigs. You
just know, before we come in here.
No, we're actually pretty good today, but definitely before some of the more. When there's a little bit of pressure going on, we kind of.
You get stressed.
Yeah, of course. It's a natural thing.
But I mean, if you were singing a song like Surrender Dorothy, which we played here, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I can hear, if I didn't know you were in a relationship, Yeah. I think I'd know you were in a relationship.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. Do you understand what I, is that stupid to say?
But no, because, I don't think so.
Because I think you care about each other in your voices.
Yeah, there's a sympathy. There's a, and I think there's an empathy in the arrangements as well. Because obviously with Eleanor's tone as well, and we have a very similar kind of timbre, as in we have a kind of a warm kind of sound to our voices. It's not a kind of a shrill thing. So I think it evokes that kind of sentiment. If it's a sentimental song, that one wasn't really, that one's about kind of like, let's just be straight with each other. It's one of those songs. That that's not.
Nobody.
I'm just concerned, Eleanor, because he's such a Beatles fan that he go around looking for an Eleanor or a Michelle.
That's it. Yeah, you went out with a Michelle as well.
Did you?
He did.
That is true.
Any other Beatles can guard names, is there? Eleanor, Michelle, who else is there?
Niall, I have a son called Lennon and a daughter called Lucy. So it's a bit
there
crazy.
The Beatles have permeated our lives.
Will you be a big Beatles fan as well?
No, I hate the Beatles. I'm a joker. Absolutely love them, yeah.
Yeah.
But nobody has a range like him. I mean, we have a similar blend, but I wish I had his falsetto.
It's very because I have heard Fran. I don't want to talk about him in the third part. He's not here for a few minutes, all right? Yeah. But I have known Fran, as you know, for the last 20 years, and he's been on my radio shows, depending on where we've been, and many different shows, by the way. He's been in warehouses where
followed
we've had
around.
We've had all sorts of different radios, popular radio stations, caves. And warehouses and caves, airports, everything.
That's
right. So we've done everything, and I have to say, listening to all the different things between the classic Beatles, the bootleg Beatles, and the range of his voice is just incredible. So is that difficult for you then to? Because I know you yourself have a great range, because being a wedding singer is difficult enough as well.
It is, it has. No, he's just one of probably my favourite male singer, and he really is. He's incredible. He's well admired within the industry.
I've got to show up now.
My favourite female singer would be Sharon Gaynor in the industry. She's phenomenal. She's great. I sing with her.
Outside of Fran, worldwide, who would be your favourite vocalist?
Male vocalist. God.
That's not on the spot or anything.
No, but I mean, when I think of male vocalist, my favourite male. Actually, I love Cat Stevens. I think he's great.
Absolutely, yeah, lovely.
I love Bob Dylan, but I know he's tone deaf, but he would be one of my favourite
vocalists. Bob Dylan, he's not everybody's cup of tea, is he?
It's
not everybody's cup of tea.
No.
Really, is it?
John Lennon as well. Like you can't, I know we're talking Paul McCartney here, but like,
finished McCartney? What do you reckon? Is he done?
It's
a bit embarrassing.
We were talking about
this
the other night. Eleanor was actually moved to tears watching the new thing with Rick Rubin, the 3-2-1 thing.
I didn't see it.
It's on. I think it's on Disney Plus. It's a beautiful thing because it's shot in stark black and white. He's in a studio with an old fashioned desk, and Rick Rubin is basically putting on the master tapes or whatever he chooses, and he'll play it, and he'll say to McCartney, "What do you think of when you hear this?" And he'll solo things, like he can hear the bass lines on the own, boom, boom. He goes like, "What are you playing there? You're playing with a pick?" And he goes, "I think I was playing with a pick on those." And then he's like, "Who's playing keyboards on this?" "Oh, that's me," you know. He's able to remember these, and there's lovely little anecdotal memories. But when he's talking, you can hear his speaking.
His voice is gone.
It's quite shredded. Now, he plays and sings a little bit live as well on it. He does a little bit of Lady Madonna, and he explains how he wrote songs on piano. So his falsetto is lovely. It's his mid-range. It's the thing that breaks your heart.
You know what broke my heart? I was a big Simon and Garfunkel fan as well.
Yeah.
And Paul Simon, or Art Garfunkel, should I say.
Yeah, but he came back. He had surgery on his vocal cords.
Yeah, that's right. But he got an infection.
His falsetto's back.
Oh, was it? Because I know he went on tour and he had to change the songs.
The way he sang them,
The way he sang them, because he just couldn't reach the notes anymore. Because there was a great, which was when they were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which was 2011. Yeah.
That
was astonishing. I watched that, and I played it once or twice here in the air with the girls, but they don't appreciate it because they're too young. But I've watched it and I say, how can that sound like it did 50 years ago?
Yeah.
And these guys are old enough to be your grandfather. They're in their 70s. And it still sounded amazing. But of course, he got the throat infection then, or whatever it was.
And they thought it wasn't going to recover. But apparently, I have it on good talk that it was definitely, it has come back since.
Do you reckon they're going to tour again?
I don't think so. No.
They're kind of friends and not friends.
He's
friends
more or less
and not
said,
friends.
Hasn't he? Paul Simon.
I saw him in concert a few years ago. It was
Art Garfunkel.
They needed to be together. It was kind of a bit boring, to be honest.
Art Garfunkel would do it at the Jump Vat. He said it on several occasions. I'd do it at the flick of a fingers, but Paul Simon doesn't want to do it anymore.
He seems an odd character, all right, doesn't he?
Strange man, but such a great song.
We argue about the Graceland album. I think it's fantastic.
It is, isn't it? Ladysmith Black Mambazo, wasn't it?
Diamonds on the Soles of His Shoes.
You see, I'm not a fan of that record, but I'm a fan of But the end again,
that was the band they played with. It was
Lady. Yeah, they were with Black Mambazo. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It was a turnaround for his career to kind of do that album at the time. And
it was a complete change.
Weird. Yeah,
he moved to the world section of the record shop. He was like, and that's probably
where he lost me. I love his feet in folk, in American folk.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, 60s influenced folk.
What were they called? Tom and Jerry, wasn't it? Before they were called...
They were called Simon & Garfunkel.
Really?
They were called Tom and Jerry. That just didn't work out because people associated with
the
cartoon.
In the song, it's like, you know, the only living boy in New York, Tom, get your plane right on time. He refers to him as Tom.
Oh, okay.
You know, and it's... a lot of people have said that they believe Simon & Garfunkel were, in fact, Simon & Garfunkel, if you know what I mean. They were in a relationship, apparently, if you're to believe some writers.
Did they ever get married, either of them?
Several times. Wasn't one of them married to Carrie Fisher?
Yeah, he was married a couple of times.
Okay, because I don't know much
Paul
about their
Simon
personal lives.
But they
believe they may have been in a relationship themselves.
It was mooted in a book a couple of years ago. I don't know.
At a time, of course, where that wouldn't have been cool, I suppose, in those days.
Well, it certainly was kept from the public, if that was the case.
Well, it wouldn't have been good.
I've heard.
Particularly in America, I suppose, in the southern states, it wouldn't have been good for their career at the time, unfortunately.
Yeah. It would be career suicide.
Well, even in the most liberal parts, you know, the East, they still wouldn't. It would be career.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously, thanks to things have changed now, but certainly at that time, it wouldn't have been the best thing to do. All right, we're going to go into a break. Before we go into a break, do you want to play another song?
Sure. We'll play you a song that we're going to release, I don't know, before the end of the year, anyway. And I know she's signalling to me to move the capo. It's capo 7 for this.
Hi ho.
What's capo 7? What's that?
It's just a really high key.
She feels like she's able for it tonight.
I think so.
It's like
do you want me to help you along? Do you want me to join in with you?
You do the harmony.
When I demoed a few of these songs to play to L, she's like, yeah, that's lovely and all, but can you put a capo like six placings up?
So this is the thing you have on your guitar, a capo. Yeah. That changes the tone.
That's standard tuning. So now we're up by seven steps.
It's changing the key now. That's all.
It's drastically changing the key.
Right.
Sounds like a mandolin, you know?
Yeah, I like that. It's nice.
This is a song called, and it's about true love. It's called True.
It's the mushiest one you ever hear.
True love,
you love. It's new love. It's true. Every time we see the stars.
And somebody just texts in, by the way, and says, can you tell the guys that everybody on the 77A is listening to them and enjoying them sing, I drive around Dublin. He's obviously a bus driver. Oh. So he's playing on the 77A. It's good to know, Fran, isn't it, that you're popular on the 77A?
Oh, that is nice.
Yeah, but that is the kind of song, when you said about songs that appear in Netflix movies or whatever, that's the kind of song I expect to hear, you know, you would hear, I suppose, in some sort of love story movie.
Yeah,
it's good. I mean, it's really beautiful.
And on the recording, there's only I think there's guitar and there's a violin, a single violin. Yeah. You know, these kind of slopey, lovely kind of little sexy moves in there.
Yeah, so somebody says that. Now, the two lads, take this kind of gender neutral on this one.
The two lads.
It's weird, actually, the way everybody is called. With the same in here, actually, we call all the girls lads. Guys. The two lads are absolutely amazing. Oh. I'm sitting out in front of the fire pit. The music has made my night. They complement each other so well, and their music is absolutely beautiful. It's been a long time since a song has made the hair on my arm stand up. I could listen to them all day.
Wow, that's lovely.
That's a nice compliment, isn't it?
That's incredible. Thank you so much. That's the really sweetest thing.
I mean, there's some lovely messages coming in here, by the way. The number is 087-188-0008. That's 087-188-0008. There's a text here as well. Really enjoying this chat with Niall, Fran and Eleanor. Big fan of Fran's old band, Beach.
Oh, wow.
From Carl in Dublin.
That's mad.
Oh, I think, yeah. Hey,
Beach.
Carl.
That was the band that... The couple of the four of us from the original Quarrymen, as we were in the early days, in the 90s, in the mid 90s, we kind of morphed into an original band because we originally set out our stall to be an original band, but we figured there's no money to be made in original music.
People want to hear the stuff they like,
But the covers band that we were also an original. We were doing that. The idea was we'll fund ourselves, you know.
Yeah.
So that was
never kind of happened.
Singles.
Here's a song we wrote ourselves.
We went to Paris in 97 and we were crowned the best unsigned band in Europe out of 600 bands from all over Europe. So that was about the best. And on the back of that,
Best compliments you probably ever got was from George Martin, wasn't it, when you were with the Classic Beats? That was one of the best compliments you ever had.
Yeah, it really was, yeah.
And I remember actually you telling me a story. I know you can't talk about it too much, but the famous story when you played for the Queen.
Yes.
At a private party.
And that was because of George Martin too, his recommendation to...
You've heard this story, obviously.
I have, indeed.
I don't know how much he's allowed to tell us, but... Okay, so what birthday was it?
It was an anniversary for the Queen's coronation.
So what year was that?
2004, I believe.
Okay, so you were asked, and this was an agency who booked VIP bands.
It was Lady Sarah, who was, I think, the Queen's first cousin or cousin. She has a huge PR firm in the UK.
So you didn't know where you were going?
We didn't know. Well, first of all, she was told that they wanted specifically a Beatles band. So, of course, who did they turn to? Only George Martin. And he had only worked with us in
Dublin.
Who was the
Beatles manager at one stage,
Beatles producer.
Sorry.
He said, there's these chaps from Ireland. They're really good, you know. And we got the phone call, but we were told on a need-to-know basis. In other words, MI5 were ringing our homes and checking our phone records and getting onto our parents. And we're like, what's all this about? It must be...
important.
It must be a politician, we were thinking. So we flew to the UK.
So you had MI5 checking yous out.
Checking out our phone record, ringing my mum going, I believe you called Saudi Arabia in 1978. Because my sister was going out with a chap who lived in Saudi Arabia. So it was all that stuff was dug up. So anyway, we went over to London on a need-to-know basis of who the client was. So we were pulling up in a limousine, because a limousine collected us at the airport, to the Ritz Hotel in London. And there was cordons of police everywhere. And we'd heard...
You weren't going out with me at the time.
We were talking... Madonna was in town. And she would think she was doing some big PR launch. We thought...
Must be for that.
It's for Madge. We're playing for Madge tonight. So we were walking through this kind of add-on part of the back of the Ritz Hotel, like a kind of marquee thing. And it was ultra posh. And the maitre d' guy was a French guy and he was walking us around. He goes, you see what we have done for Her Majesty? And we were like... roll back the sentence there.
A Majesty?
Which Majesty? And we're thinking, oh, he's going to say Madonna or, you know, the Queen of Denmark or somebody. He goes, Queen Elizabeth's here tonight. And we're like, what? She's the client.
Oh my God.
So that's literally.
It was her birthday. So the funny
part. Well, it was an anniversary of a coronation.
Okay, so this is something that we would never, ever get to see. So she was being herself.
Yeah, and
not wearing
any. So she's dancing. Yeah, she danced for the tour. Because what we did, when we heard that, we huddled together and we Googled and we found out the exact set that the Beatles played at the Royal Command performance, which apparently she loved in 1964. And we did the exact set and she danced for the entire thing.
Her
and she even she gave you a nod.
So you
had the Beatles gear on, you had a wig on,
yeah.
And she said to you, what was it? Love the wig.
It was. And we had to do the lineup at the end, like the Beatles do, you know, like in those films. And Prince Philip stopped in front of us, and he said to Scott, who was playing John Lennon, he said, like, "Are you from? I believe you're from Belfast, are you?" And he said, "No, we're from Ireland. We're from Dublin." He goes, "Oh, the Republic." He says, "You're very good. You just made a terrible racket." And without missing a beat, Scott says, "It wasn't me, it was him."
Well, what an experience, and one I probably you'll never
strange.
Sadly get to probably do again. By the way, just on our Twitter account as well, I just popped a photograph of the 2 years up there.
Yeah.
And somebody says, "Listening here in Australia, loving the show, loving Fear of Folk. Beautiful song."
That's beautiful. That's so sweet. It's incredible how you... you advertise something and you put it on your social media and all of a sudden people tuning in from all over the world. That's an amazing thing.
All right, well, let's take
hello
a break.
Hello, Oz.
We're going to go. Hello, Australia. I sound a good Australian accent, isn't it?
That'll pass.
Yeah, the Barbie. Play a song. Listen, play it at the Barbie.
We loved touring over there. We were over there for with the Bootleg Beach Boys.
We'll be going there for a while, I'd say.
No,
there won't be anybody getting in there. It's all got a bit pear-shaped over there.
Mm. So I believe, yeah.
Yeah, and they were the poster boys at the start of all this, and now there's a big problem, of course.
Yeah, well, I think New Zealand was the one who kept the clean whistle, wasn't it?
But sure.
Like everything.
And they're not going to let tourism in for the rest of their lives, so they have to do something at some stage. I mean,
I think normality has to resume somewhere.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Crowded House cleaned up because they're a New Zealand band, and they were in there, so they were just touring everywhere
in New
Zealand.
Their album came out at just the right time because they got the green light to tour again.
So nobody else was touring.
Yeah, so
Australia, New Zealand, that was it. So Nick Seymour, if you're out there, well done.
Would you like to listen to Crowded House or maybe Crowded House?
Their new record is great.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, we've got to take a break. We'll be back with more Feral Folk and maybe a little bit of Beatles squeezed in before the end, a bit of Paul McCartney. The number is 087-188-0008. Where's the text in, by the way? What was your favourite song or favourite gig that you've ever been to? The lads are absolutely amazing. Love the music that comes in from Ken. Hi, Niall. Wonderful and relaxing music. The singers are great. I wish them every success in the future, says Michael in Loughrea. All right, I'm joined in the studio by Fear of Folk. If you want to look it up, by the way, there's an O in the middle. It's not of.
Yes,
so it's Fear of Folk.
Apostrophe
just
folk,
to make life
because
difficult.
We found out.
Where did that name come from,
typically,
by the way? I think I've asked you this question before, probably, but where did the name come
from? Well, originally we were Fear of with the OF, but I think there's an American trio that kind of called themselves that. So we'd started marketing a record, so we just said, look, you know what we'll do? I think it was actually Eleanor's idea. Drop the F and put in the apostrophe.
But that's it's quite.
And then it's a little bit Irish. Fear, oh, fuck.
Oh, yeah, totally.
There is a bit of diddly idle to it because.
But there's nothing diddly idle about the music.
No,
there
isn't. No. Somebody says, was that the one that Brian May played on top of the castle called Party of the Palace? That would have been around the same time that you did that, actually.
2004. Probably, actually.
It was the anniversary of the coronation, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Wasn't there a big gig? They did a big official public gig as well, didn't
they? That's right, McCartney was on it, and he had the Hofner bass that was like the British flag.
That was about the last time you could actually sing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, there is an ethical question at the moment, right, around McCartney, and whether he should just stop now. I said to somebody a while ago, if he played in the Three Arena tomorrow, I'd go and see him, even though I know he can't sing.
Of course.
Because I'm going for the music and for the songs and for the memories and the nostalgia. It doesn't matter that he can't
sing. Well,
here's
what I'd love to see him do. If I was his manager, I'd say, stop the arena gigs and do 4 nights in Vicar Street, intimate acoustic gigs, which are band all playing acoustically, and do your Yesterdays and the songs that are within his range that he still has intact.
Can he still do those?
Oh, he can, yeah. It's when he's starting to do Helter Skelter and he's screaming. That's what's doing the damage.
Yeah.
Because he refuses to change the keys. He's doing them all in the original keys, which is madness.
Yeah.
You know, 2 years from now, I won't be singing them in that key.
Yeah, but is he not right to do that? Because there's nothing worse than going to a gig when an artist changes the song.
Well, Queen used to do that with Bohemian Rhapsody. Used to take it down 2 keys when they did it live.
But you know who's the worst for doing it? I watched a video there recently with Mark Knopfler.
And he's always had it.
Yeah, and so he did, you know, the Sultan's Swing. It doesn't even sound like the same song.
His songs are low anyway. They're very low in key, aren't they? Mm.
Yeah, but it just does. He changes it. It seems. I mean,
it's like Dylan. Dylan changes them. Has been doing the last 20 years.
That's not what I paid to see. And I know that
his
sounds
gigs
really
are terrible.
Nasty,
I love him, but his gigs are always a bit disappointing. Bob Dylan. He never does what you want. He'll never sing a song you want. You know.
Yeah, that's called creativity, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
So what was that? Wasn't the last? Was it James Taylor? People start walking out over here. Do you remember that?
Oh no, that was Cat Stevens.
Cat Stevens,
because he was
doing
an entire new album.
And what was that about?
But apparently, I heard this from somebody who was at the gig. It was a 3-hour show, but an hour and a half in, he was doing a full hour and a half of a brand new record, which is brave of an
artist.
Religious
stuff, was it, kind of?
Well, no, just new, brand new stuff that people wouldn't have heard because the record hadn't come out yet. So he was promoting this new record. And what happened is he took an interval and loads of people went to the box office and looking for their money back, because they're saying, he hasn't done any of the hits.
Do Moonshadow.
Like, there must be
gone.
Only a half an
it
hour
left. Father and Son, like, for God's
what
sake.
What he didn't realise, he had to come out on stage apparently and say, whoa, hang on, lads. There's another hour and a half of this show. It's
That's
a 3-hour show.
For a punter,
and then I'm going to do all the hits at the end. He did the last hour, all the classic. Na 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 na. All that stuff.
But a lot of people have gone
he's
home
brilliant,
at that stage.
His voice hasn't changed.
No, he is. And he's amazing.
Gilbert O'Sullivan on him. I saw Gilbert with my daughter a couple of years ago. And I swear to God, you might as well be in 1972. His voice is pristine.
Gilbert O'Sullivan?
Yeah. I never aged his voice. It's incredible.
I love his writing.
Yeah,
I love
his
songs.
He's an amazing songwriter.
Yeah, naturally is.
The chord changes are ridiculous. You know?
And Howard Jones is a great artist as well.
Jeff Lynne's voice hasn't changed still. He's still great, isn't he?
Jeff
his voice Lynne. Is still really, really
What's going on there? He sounds the same now. Yeah. Mm. That Wembley gig, which is now available on DVD, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, he sounds the same. Yeah. I've seen them twice in the last 7 or 8 years.
And there's no autotune right in their life. Like, he is bang on the money.
And an unusual man. I believe that he doesn't really interact with the band.
Not really, no.
He arrives like
he's
5 minutes.
Solitary kind of guy.
5 minutes before the gig, 10 minutes before the gig, and leaves straight after the gig.
Yeah.
He's a very solitary type
of
person.
I mean, the keyboard player, I think, are the kind of one of the. I think there's three of the original band in that lineup, and the keyboard player does the Mr. Blue Sky.
Yeah, he doesn't play much with them now. He didn't play in the Wembley one,
did
I don't
not?
Think.
No.
He plays with them now and again, obviously, because he's quite older.
In his 60s now as well.
I think he's a bit older than that, probably. I mean, Jeff Lynne's in his late 60s.
Jeff Lynne, but you made a fool of me. When he starts that, like, his voice is like.
It's perfect. But
unbelievable.
When he sang Wild West Hero, how is he reaching those notes in the 60s?
Because he looked out. See, famously, ELO didn't tour an awful lot. I think my sister saw them in 1982. With that big album, Discovery.
That's right. Well, they had the big spaceship.
Yeah. And that was the set. Yeah, you're probably at that gig then.
Yeah.
My sister was like, big fucking spaceship.
Big spaceship. That's
amazing.
Right, yeah. And the spaceship came down. And what happened at the start of the gig was it was in the round.
Yeah.
And the spaceship would lift up.
Yeah, like the band were inside it.
And the band were inside
it. Very Spinal Tap. Very Spinal Tap.
Which would have been amazing at the time.
And with full strings and all.
Did anybody combust on stage?
Well, at that stage you would have had...
But he hadn't...
You know there's another version of ELO, the tour.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is Violinsky.
Oh, really?
Which I don't understand the logic behind it. So he's the violin player.
Yeah.
So he goes around calling himself Violinsky in ELO.
Oh, wow.
Or something like that. So that's why... It's Jeff Lynne's ELO. It has to be called Jeff Lynne's ELO. Because seemingly he doesn't own the name.
That's right. And I was sat, this is funny, I was at the Ringo gig when Ringo played here a couple of years ago. Oh, geez, a couple of years ago, 2003 maybe, when he came with the All-Star Band, Peter Frampton and the band. I blagged some tickets for that. And I was sat up in the VIP section next to BP Fallon on one side of me. And Roy Wood from the original ELO.
Oh, okay, so who would have been, people would remember more so from this Christmas song.
And everyone thought he was Ozzy Osbourne because he had the roundy orange, the purple glasses, and everyone's going...
Has anyone ever seen Jeff Lynne's eyes, by the way? Because I think he's
wore
those sunglasses since he was born.
For years,
Okay, well, look, you're going to do a Beatles song for me.
Yes, I am going to do an old staple, an old classic that I haven't done probably since the
So blame me if it all goes wrong, is that what you're trying to say?
Don't blame me if I can't hit the high notes.
Are you going to join in or do I lower you down?
No, you can lower me down for this one, I think.
Yesterday... All my troubles seem so far away. Now it looks as though they're here to stay. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Suddenly, I'm not half the man I used to be. There's a shadow hanging over me. Oh, yesterday came suddenly. Why she had to go,
say. I said something wrong, now I long for yesterday. Yesterday, love was such an easy game to play. Now I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday. Why she had to go, I don't know, she wouldn't say. I said something wrong, now I long for yesterday. Yesterday, love was such an easy game to play. Now I need a place to hide away. Oh, I believe in yesterday.
You can clap this time, Eleanor. You can clap this time. Even Eleanor was like, she was like a groupie over there for the 2 minutes. I mean, you love hearing him sing those Beatles songs.
And that's in G, which like is two keys higher than McCartney's one.
Like, I'm like, leave it on. By the way, leave the costume on.
Somebody says, ah, Fran, it's great to hear you again from your old pal Dee and Katie.
Ah, no way.
Yeah, I don't know who they are, but I'm sure you do.
I do, of course, yeah.
One of the best gigs you ever heard somebody else was Metallica at Slane. It was my first proper gig in years, but my favourite band. When you watch it on YouTube, the crowd is singing Whiskey in the Jar louder than the band. Oh. The only downside, it was Slane. The walk back to the car was hell and a nightmare to get out of. Slane is a disastrous gig for access.
I was never, Elle, you were at it. Right?
I was. I was there, I was 13. My dad drove myself and my pal to see Pearl Jam. It was the year Neil Young played, do you remember that year?
Yeah.
We had six cans of Pepsi going in. We were really like quite innocent, you know. They took them off us going in.
Was it Pepsi though?
Yeah, was it Pepsi? He was really guilty. Six cans of Pepsi.
We loved the Saw Doctors. They were throwing bales of hay at everybody. And I remember, four non-blondes in acid.
Yeah.
They were there. She jumped out, did a jump onto the crowd, a mosh, and they took her top off. It was horrible.
I went to see the Rolling Stones, Queen, and sadly, the biggest mistake in my life, I went to see Madonna. Which was the worst gig I've ever seen it live.
Wow. I've seen it on YouTube.
It was the disastrous gig. Firstly, there was Iggy Pop.
So
we were there from 3 o'clock.
Yeah.
Iggy Pop eventually came on about 5 or 6 o'clock. He lasted one song and he threw the microphone at somebody in the audience because they called him a name. And then they pulled his sound and he kept singing on and you could hear the kind of strings.
Yeah.
And he was shouting because he'd no mic because they took the mic off him. And some security came out and pulled him off the stage.
He's not a good act for a Madonna show.
No. He was shite anyway, right? Yeah. And then there was another 3 hour wait because it started raining. Madge was supposed to come on the stage at 8 o'clock, whatever, let's say.
Yeah.
She didn't come on at 9:30.
Wow.
Because she wouldn't come out in the rain.
So eventually the rain stopped. Remember that? She was gone. She had people out with towels.
So eventually the rain stopped and it was a little bit drizzly. Mm-hmm. So for the whole gig, she had a bouncer walking beside her with an umbrella over her head.
Oh my God.
And I went, what a prima donna. What a total clown.
Yeah,
I mean, imagine paying to see this.
Yeah.
I've seen a clip of her being, she's backstage around 1985, 86. I think it was the big concert with everyone.
Who's that girl?
I don't know which one it was. But Bette Midler was backstage as well. It was Live Aid in America. That's what it was. And, you know, I think she's a queen. She's incredible. She's a great performer. Mm. You know, and she was standing to be introduced to her and she just kind of walked past. She was kind of like that from day one, you know.
Yeah, I think she's always had a bit of airs and graces about her.
Yeah, like you don't do that.
And that would have been early
Midler.
Doors, like she's for her career, like early, big early
time.
In her career.
And she would have been, you know, she was big at the time. And
okay, well, we've got about 4 minutes left. So do you want to do a Fear of Folk song before you go?
Do you want? Do you fancy?
Have we got
doing
one more?
Yes, we have We have the single that's out at the moment. We could give that a lash. Would you like to try that?
What capo was that now?
Mm. That's a good question.
What capo was he going to do on this one?
Five. Will I do a random? Oh, it's five. We're down.
Yeah, okay. Do a five. God, you might as well.
We'll see.
Whatever that means.
Okay, this one's called Surrender, Dorothy. Influenced by Leonard Cohen.
I want you, I need you, I wanna hold and feel you, so gentle, be mine tonight. Your voice is so soothing, with words my heart you're moving, so close now, be mine tonight. Your arms so tight around me, your lips on mine, nobody can inspire me the way you do. So won't you please surrender
about that song more so than anything else. I think I said this before, right? And don't take this as an insult.
Yeah, yeah.
That it's short. Because I think when you have a song that's that beautiful and it's short, it leaves you wanting more.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the ethos. Like we were thinking and we were talking about when we were making this EP, to specifically, because another way in the 80s and 90s songs became 4-minute opuses, 3-minute opuses, pop rock things. We were harking back to the 50s where things were on vinyl and it made you want to play it again.
Yeah.
And that was the idea apparently behind 45.
The record for the shortest song, what is it? It's Congratulations. No, Not Unusual.
Is Tom Jones, it's a really short song. It's like 2 minutes or something.
Yeah, it's one of the shortest songs ever recorded and
that
released.
Was my first gig. I was a backing singer for a Tom Jones show. My uncle Roy Taylor, he was Tom Jones.
Oh, sure, I've had Roy on the show. I spoke to Roy on the show there not so long ago. How is he now?
He's doing okay, for M&D. Fighting for that. He's doing all right.
Once you're back, M&D.
Yeah, we had him in here one night just before the COVID, actually, not long before COVID. Yeah. We had him in here chatting away.
Great, man.
But listen, guys, it's been wonderful having you in. It's been relaxing, it's been soothing, and it's been a bit of a change of the show. And it's just the whole idea of actually having somebody in the studio again.
Yeah, yeah.
Apart from obviously Aisling and Ruth, who I've had in here for the last time.
A sense of normality.
It's not the sense that I'm sick of looking at them or anything like that, but just somebody different to look at just for a change. It's been lovely having you.
And can I just say, before we go, a big, huge thank you to you, because for people like you who have been supporting bands, not just now and during COVID times, but going back through the years with the various bands I've had in here and other people and loads of other artists who don't really properly get to thank you for what you do for music.
Oh, you're very good. I'm sure you don't thank me.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.